Okay. Hello and welcome to the Zen Embodiment Podcast with Laura Cleveland. I'm trying to say it right. Welcome.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. So glad to have you here. So I wanted to talk to Laura today about her experience with Zen, and she's just about to head to Karinji to train with Mado Moore Roshi. And I wanted to kind of just check in with her before she does and get a little bit of her story and get a little sense of what's driving her as a young person to go do this training right now. So Laura, you were born in Milan, right?
Yeah, I was. My parents had both been working in Europe, maybe 5 and 10 years before, and then they met, and they had me there. My mom's a classical Baroque musician, and my father was helping digitize, I guess, the electrical companies there in Italy. And we lived there for the first 5 years of my life, and then we moved to the States.
Yeah, yeah. Hi, Jean. I'm just going to say hi to your mom. Hi, Jean. Yeah. Okay. So then childhood was where?
Childhood was in Northern California. Both my parents were what you would call seekers, you know? They both from an early age, you know, their mid-20s. And they're also older, so both my parents are in their mid-70s. So they were kind of...
Right.
All of this is kind of beginning to blossom and bloom. Kind of were able to catch some of that. My mom was just saying that she got to see Shogim Trungpa when he would come to Los Angeles. And Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism for her was this kind of explosive book that defined the 70s.
Yes. Okay, so you went to St. John's, right?
And I went to St. John's, right.
Yeah, that's a serious school.
It was, and I had at that point kind of given up on public education. I realized that if I really wanted to do the kind of learning that I wanted, that was actually interesting to me and actually felt relevant to the kind of concerns of my life of like what's meaningful and what you should really do, that I'd have to do it by myself. And then I found the reading list for St. John's and I was like, oh, thank God I can do it with other people, you know?
Yeah. And was that in Maryland?
That was in Maryland.
Okay, cool. Okay. Cool. And I have to assume you met some amazing professors there.
Incredible. Right. Yeah. I mean, I had the high pleasure and honor of being the assistant to Eva Bran, who's one of the most senior professors there and a brilliant philosopher and also an incredible human being, you know, like really kind of down to earth and grounded and funny. So I got to work for her for almost 4 years. And then I also had the great benefit of there was a professor named Robert Drucker, who happened to be my seminar tutor that year.
Wow.
And he was a student of Bernie Glassman's.
Yeah, okay, cool.
One summer we went and talked about the Oxfording pictures, like every week, you know, reading different translations.
Yeah, okay.
And then we had a Dogen study group.
Yeah.
Where we translated it with a bunch of, you know, the college students who didn't know much about Zen.
Cool. Right. Okay. So that's part of what my question here is. So that was sort of eye-opening for you about Zen.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Cause I had gone to Tassajara when I was 21.
Okay. So that was before you finished school.
Right.
Okay. Right. Okay. So why did you go to Tassajara?
Well, so I had just finished my sophomore year there. And there were, you know, there were a variety of things. I found Gil Franciel's Dharma Talks online. It just kind of in this mess of like having spent a year, that's the year that you study the Bible at St. John's. And after a year, and I wrote my thesis paper on Bach's St. Matthew Passion. So I just had, you know, it was like a year of really getting into the suffering of Jesus and wondering, you know, how do we create so much harm to one another, you know, and just seeing, you know, the kind of brokenness of the world in a certain way. all of that led to this kind of confusion of like, okay, so I love philosophy, I love literature, but how do you live it out, you know, in this moment where I'm kind of overtaken by grief? It just seems so excruciatingly painful to kind of to be immersed in this realm, and I don't feel in myself, I don't know how to meet it. Somehow a friend of mine told me that Tessa Harrod existed, and I found it and I applied and I went. Yeah.
So would you say that would be something like the Great Doubt? Would you say that that was your version of the Great Doubt?
I think I had mine a lot earlier. I mean, and you know, there's different instances of it, but
yeah,
I think as a teenager, I was very confused about like what was actually of value. You know, it seemed to me like so many models of life were, I don't know, they just didn't look satisfying to me, and the people who were living them out didn't always seem honest with themselves about, you know, how satisfied they were. And I kind of had this feeling of like, if I want to live a deep life, if I feel like there's a way of living, a way of interacting and relating to the world that actually, like actually touches it, you know, I'm going to have to do it on my own, because I'm not finding.
Except then maybe finding a place to go and train and do that, right?
Right. I mean, that Zen was like finding, it was like, oh, there's a practice that you do with this community of people who are all kind of open and exploring that for themselves.
Yes, yes. And okay, and so what was Tassajara like for you?
Oh, it was beautiful. It was funny. I was looking back, and I think while I was there, I didn't realize how powerful Zazen was, you know, because I had just been given some instruction. Oh, you're frozen. Oh, there. You're good. I think you're good now.
Okay.
I'd been given kind of minimal instruction. It was just kind of like, sit, let go of any ideas you have of doing anything. You know, just see what happens. Somehow, like looking back, like the experience of reality that I began to access just by having that early morning and late afternoon meditation, and the way that that kind of just began to bleed into the rest of life, you know, where even like making hummus for days on end, which is what I did, perfecting guacamole. Even though that was all, you know, that was really the content of my summer. And then I made some good friends too. Yeah. All of it just became kind of magnificent, you know?
Yeah.
It began to, it was like, this is worthwhile in itself, you know, just to be alive and to get to be this way with other people and to get to, kind of sink into that and I spent a lot of time in the woods as well, out in the Ventana wilderness.
Right, right. And you connected with teachers there and that was a wonderful experience.
Yeah, I mean, less so. They kind of come through during the summer, you know. So,
right.
Funny, I did. I ended up being the incense bearer for the teacher Jiryu Richmond Byler, who I'm deeply, deeply grateful to. Huh. And then, you know, years later, you know, I think 8 years later, I was his assistant at Green Gulch, you know. So I was always carrying the incense for him.
Yeah. Okay. So let's keep going. So went back to school.
I told the tanto, I was like, I want to stay and I want to do this for the rest of my life. And he said, why don't you go get your degree?
Wow. Cool. Who was that?
At the time it was Greg Fain.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So went back to school, finished up. And then you ended up at Green Gulch. What happened in between that?
Yeah, it was actually a pretty brief amount of time. I worked for a year in Annapolis for the professor, Dr. Brand, and waitressing, you know, kind of learning how to how to make a life. And then I was in a relationship, and it kind of, just kind of disintegrated.
Yeah.
Pretty painfully, you know, just. Really? You know, it's interesting, he's now into Zen, he's more into Korean Zen, but I'm like, well, at least he got Zen out of it, you know?
Right.
So I went back home to Nevada City and kind of regrouped. And while I was there, I started sitting with a satellite sangha of John Terrence.
Okay. Yeah, cool.
Kind of like go on.
That's not the Ring of Bone, is it?
No. It's funny, I would have gone to Ring of Bone, but this Sangha was literally literally down the driveway from me.
Yeah.
Like, that's too close, you know.
Cool. Wow. Wow. Yeah. Right. And okay, so how did that develop for you? Where did that lead? What was it about it that kept hooking you and making you want to go deeper into it?
Right. I mean, it's weird. A lot of things in my life, I had kind of explicit intentions, you know, like St. John's was like, I need to do this.
Yeah.
But with Zen, like, I look back and I'm like, I don't know why I'm waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday during school, you know, to go sit a Zazen Kai. I don't actually like,
yeah.
There's a way in which it felt compelled. It was just like this, I need to do this. I'm going to do this. I know that and a sense that it was like everything that I loved in a way because of Zen, like whatever it was that Zen was at the heart.
Yeah.
But I didn't know. I didn't know. Yeah.
Yeah. So it right. It touched something in you, which kind of drew you along and hooked you somehow. Right. Okay. So, you went and lived at Green Gulch. Okay.
Yeah. So I was in Nevada City and then, you know, for maybe 8 months. And then I moved to Green Gulch. Yeah. To do a practice period.
Yeah. And you were the is that right? Guest housekeeper or something? What were you? Sorry.
Well, my first 8 months at Green Gulch, I worked in the kitchen and then I worked on the farm, which is an amazing experience. It was when I returned, I was the guest house manager.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And you left there and now you are going to go train with Mado Moore.
Oh, no. Oh, not quite.
Keep going. Tell me about it. Keep going. Keep it going with your story, please.
Yeah, so I was at Green Gulch for about 8 months and I only meant to really be there for two, just for the practice period. My next boyfriend was graduating from school and we were going to go woof in Germany and translate Hegel and Aristotle. And I said, well, I have this credit. Let me do this thing because I feel, something in me is being drawn and I don't want to go without doing that. Yeah. And then a month in, I called him and I said, you know, I'm so sorry. I'm really sorry. But I need to do this, you know.
Yes.
So I kind of stayed on for the summer, worked on the farm, and then I moved to Tassajara.
Right. So then you moved to Tassajara, and how long were you there?
I was there for about two and almost a half years.
Right. Awesome. So can you tell me about that, your experience there?
Gladly, yeah. Okay, it's an incredible place to practice. There's something even just physically about the land that just feels like it's working on a really deep level and kind of intensifies everything. You know, when everything feels kind of like dark and narrow and really intense, it really feels that way. But also sometimes it just feels so light and so clean, so simple and so immediate. I was listening to Genryo's, you know, interview with you, and he said something that struck me. It was like living so directly in relationship with nature, you know?
Right.
Where like, you know, which bushes are going to start blossoming when spring comes, you know, and you know,
right.
You know, you can watch the constellations kind of move across the night sky throughout the year.
Right. It's out and, there.
Wait, what?
Sahara's out there. It's out there.
It's really out there. Yeah. And it's kind of, you know, limited heat, but you're really cold or really hot a lot of the time.
Right. Wow. And so you stayed there a while. You actually got ordained, right?
No, actually, it was interesting.
No, sorry.
No, it's okay. I don't think we've ever talked about, we've had wonderful conversations so many amazing Qigong classes.
Oh, thanks. Cool.
I don't think I've ever told you my story. So.
Well, good, please.
I didn't ordain, actually. I felt I didn't even lay ordain, take Jukai, which, you know, a lot of people do quite quickly.
Okay.
But I kind of had this sense that it was really, for some reason, it felt like I really, for me, it was, I knew that it was going to be like a part of the process for me of asking for priest ordination. That was really what I felt called to, like pretty quickly into my time at Zen Center. Was a sense like, I want to do this for my whole life, you know? And I'll even kind of give up my own personal sense of identity or freedom in a way, you know, that I feel willing to kind of take on that role, even though it's such a horrible role in a way, you know, it's so, it's such a, yeah, you get it so, you receive so many projections and, you know, there's so much scrutiny of your life that it's really I think Meto Mori Roshi said it beautifully, but it's really like an act of saying that you're in service to everyone for the rest of your life.
You know? Right. Yes. Wow.
I was just a monk. Not even ordained, lay ordained for my time there. And then by the end of my 2.5 years, you know, which was about five practice periods there, I began to feel like I really needed a teacher, you know, and I really needed a teacher if I was to ordain. But I felt like I'm doing so much long sitting, you know, and such interesting and deep experiences are arising, but I don't quite know how to how to work with them.
So there wasn't really a right at that point for you, a core teacher at Tassajara. Mm-hmm. Okay, I get it. All right.
Because they kind of come and go too. Although there is an incredible woman, I would give her a shout out, but Leslie James, again, who I'm so grateful to. She's kind of the lay teacher who's lived there for decades.
Okay.
Minimize her time.
I lost you a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Let's try again. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and then keeping going.
So about 2.5 years, and then I went to Green Gulch, you know, and with the explicit intention to ask a teacher there to ordain with him. And it was kind of a, I think, I had had some questions kind of bubbling up in me, you know, at Tassajara. You know, I mean, a lot of them were like, what is Zazen? You know, and how, especially when the kind of orientation is so much kind of releasing and relaxing and surrendering, how do you not just let your karma then take over? Like, so I might give up intentional control, but then, you know, it seems like there's a lot of habits and kind of automatic, you know, thought patterns or automatic emotional patterns that really quickly can kind of fill that space up. And then I'm just living totally unconsciously, you know, or totally at their whims, rather than actually having space for something deeper to move through me. And I felt, and for me, that felt like I needed to bring more energy and more structure to my zazen. Like I needed to have more suppleness or aliveness.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really getting instruction or much. Yeah. Sometimes it even felt like that question was kind of dismissed.
Yeah.
So there was that aspect. And then the aspect of like, well, what's the long-term training possible here? I guess there were some questions about kind of similar, actually, it's basically the same question as Zazen practice, but like, yeah, how to have like a cohesive communal intention about how we're going to practice together, and that strong sense of like Zen practice is really what we're here for. So these things kind of they were kind of unanswered, and then they kind of began to burn, you know, as I began to imagine like, well, this is the rest of my life, you know. I found your blog. I think I found your blog January of last year, and I can't tell, I would just start crying. I remember just sitting on my bed at Green Gulch, just like weeping, because I felt like finally someone was talking about the things that drew me to Zen, you know, and that I had kind of begun to question, and I was like, maybe this is just all my, you know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Wow. So what in particular was was articulated or whatever. I'd love to hear that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, let me try. You know, it's hard. Oh no. I mean, for me, it was kind of it's incredible your descriptions of like the energy movement and dynamics that occur during Zazen, and the kind of psychological and spiritual orientations that result, you know, like how do you live your life with like the spirit of Zazen? I mean, it's hard to say. So,
yes.
But I mean, for me, it just felt like, yeah, I was getting so little instruction about how to work with energy. And I was really, I think I've always had kind of a tendency towards that kind of more subtle experience, and a confusion sometimes of like you're sitting for 7 days straight and suddenly you're having like strong energetic experiences, and it's really the content of your life. It's really like, and there's no way to talk about it. So I felt like,
yeah,
it's hard to say. You do it so beautifully, but for me, it was like you found a language and a way to relate to it that I.
And it kind of gives you permission.
Right.
Permission to, you know, the elephant in the room, you know,
right?
And how can you start to move against that and let it move you, and learn how to dialogue with that, right? This sort of internal process, and how can I, you know, often we have this chaos going on, right? And we don't know what's going on. We can't feel it. And so we get kind of stuck in that. But if you begin to then have this internal kind of language, internal sophistication, then you're able to, okay, this is moving through me. I can let this move through me, or move, you know, right?
Right.
Instead of it being like, my analogy is always that we're like walking against the current, you know?
Right.
There's the current, and here we go. I'm going this way against it, right?
Right. And kind of resisting reality, you know, kind of like really embracing I think for, and how to find that, not just like, yeah, not just in seated meditation, you know, but with your whole life.
Love it. So how do we meet our experience and explore it and melt with it and become our experience, right?
Right. And the sense of somehow of like, I mean, this is a moment where I feel a little hesitant or something, but a sense, like the sense of awe or of reverence or of deep gratitude that comes out of that, you know, where it somehow, then it's like any simple experience has like, not only does it have the depth and the kind of like, sustaining like life to it, you know, but it also, I mean, for me, what I hope is to find a way to like, of gratitude and of reverence and a desire to like, to care, you know, to care for the world. I think that's.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we become these vectors, we become these mediums for this life energy, you know, and we, you know, at first it's sort of, you know, we're just being moved around by it. And then eventually we're able to share that and have it help people, you know?
Exactly.
Yes. Right.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
And even just to give, just if you, I mean, which I feel like you do so frequently, Claire, you know, like when, like our classes are so amazing because, you know, during quarantine, you know, somehow there was always activity, even though we were doing nothing, you know, I mean, more so for people with children, but I was doing nothing. And somehow I'd always, you know, I'd get to class, log on, and just continuously to have access to a much deeper realm, you know, I felt like your classes were this door. And every time I opened the door, everything would kind of sink and settle, and I would feel my own life so much more deeply. So,
yeah.
Wow. And I think that's healing for, you know, for me and for everyone. And
yes,
more that more of us are operating from that level,
yes,
I think the more peace, you know, there'll be in the world.
Yes, yes. I mean, feeling connected.
Feeling connected, right.
To ourselves, to the universe, to others. Yeah.
I mean, right.
Feeling deeply. I feel like it's like grace. It's like feeling.
Right.
Yes. So in that wholesale experience of life, right?
Right?
Connected with the source, right? Rather than even a name for it, right? So that's part of what I love about Zen is it you know, gives you this direct access to this universal you know, connection. And then we can go and we can share that in a myriad, you know, myriad ways. But yeah, yeah. My classes have been such a joy. Thank you so much for being there. Yeah.
I mean, I thought, yes, Soke said it so beautifully, like they're changing my life, you know, that was the feeling. And to do it during that time period that was so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What else? Let's hear. Okay.
So I guess maybe just like, I like this, the kind of weaving in and out. It's kind of the way I work too. But yes, I was at Green Gulch. I found your blog. I think my friends must have been so tired of me saying, the Zen embodiment blog. I was telling everyone, I was like, you have to read this, you know? Yeah. Like, this is what I thought we were doing, you know? This is what, and I got kind of, yeah, I got confused. I was really, and I was beginning to despair, and I was beginning actually to feel very distant from my own practice. You know, it was so strange.
Yeah.
Yeah, after four years or 3 years at Zen Center, you know, kind of more senior, I know the forms.
Yes.
I can mostly go throughout the day without making a, you know, horrible mistake. Kind of know how everything's working. And kind of feeling a little, yeah, something felt stuck to me. And it had to do with these questions.
Where do you think like Tomden is in that conversation?
An enormous part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's, yeah, because those were, like, it's interesting, I think you said this too, playing the Mukugyo, but also, yeah, playing the Mukugyo, playing the Enmei or something, and learning how to accelerate in a way where you're listening to the Sangha, you're like, you're riding the wave of the Sangha so that you don't hurry anyone, but you're also moving forward, and you're working with your own body to kind of, like, smoothly accelerate,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And not go too fast, too quick, or not too, you know. And it just seemed like pretty often that off, like the only way I could really sink in as a Mukugyo player was if something in my heart just like opened,
yeah.
And I felt this incredible power and heat there, you know.
Yeah.
Like that was the real place for me to have the energy,
yes.
To really play the Mukugyo.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, there's only that, but also, I mean, just, you know, during sessions, working sometimes, but it felt so haphazard. That was the thing for me.
Yeah.
I had read von Durkheim's book early in my time at Green Gulch. And again, I had that like, oh, this is what I was, even though he was a Nazi and that's really,
you're right.
One of the things I would, yeah, it's hard to parse with Zen sometimes, but I found it just so powerful, and I felt like that was really, that kind of embodied energetic orientation was really what I found myself continually drawn to.
Yes.
But we didn't really talk about it in those terms.
Right, right, right. And I think, you know, that you know, the Tonden work, the Lower Dantian work is such a big part of the my training, you know, and sort of central focus, you know, and it sounds like that was something you weren't focusing much on and that you were craving.
Right, right, right. Very much so. And then I think after finding your blog and a friend of mine, actually I was gonna go to the February session, but it ended up not working. But I think I went in May.
Yeah.
And sat with Shota Harada Roshi and just that sense of like, just to watch him be, you know, just to watch him walk up to the kitchen, you know, at the end of the day was like, it felt like that, it was like this total confirmation of everything that I had been looking for, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the sense, and then somehow sitting in the Zendo with all these kind of seasoned practitioners, you could really feel, you know, you could really feel the energy. And I kind of had like a glimpse of how to work with the Tanden, you know, but not really deeply.
Yeah.
And I would say I haven't had continuous access to it since, until I took your classes.
Right.
It feels to me like that's really been the avenue where that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a kind of tool to work with that. Right.
And right.
Something you could kind of always be, working with, because there are power techniques. Their energy becomes wild, it becomes, you know, fleeting, you know, but the Tanden is this way to kind of work with it all the time, right?
Right.
So
even when I'm walking down the street, like almost late to work or something, you know, I'd be like, oh, here it is, you know, I hear, and if I connect to that, then all of a sudden I can even walk briskly and I don't feel like,
right. Yeah, that wasn't that interesting what Genro was saying about the punk show in the Zendo. Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah. Well, and I think that I wanted Zen that was like that was kind of like fully alive, you know, and kind of like, yeah, just really like totally there. And you know, maybe that's not the mode you're in all the time, right? Maybe that's not, you know, you modulate according to circumstances, but at least that was possible, you know, and yeah, I guess I wasn't quite feeling that. So yeah, I set a session with Shodo Rinpoche.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that year, I decided that that kind of style of practice wasn't really right for where I was.
Yeah.
I felt like it was kind of making me more stuck rather than making me more open.
Yeah. Right.
And I set another session with him in September with Harada Rishi, and felt like, yeah, Rinzai, I mean, I really wanted to study with him, and I really wanted to study Rinzai.
Yeah, there's this aspect in Rinzai of this shikari, which means to like grasp with all of your being, you know, and then there's also letting go, you know, and both of them need to be there, you know.
Right,
and you know, some of us are better at shikari, grasping with all of our being, you know, and we have to learn to, you know, kind of let go. But I think that's something, sounds like that you're drawn to do some of that, to dive in with all of your being, with full, right? Yeah.
And that feels like energizing, and I like enjoyable, you know, that's like that for me, it's like fully exerting, like fully feels to me really just alive and appealing, and I feel like I have more, like I have kind of more lax tendencies naturally in a way, you know, like I'm kind of spacier, kind of dreamier, and kind of struggled with kind of like an aloofness, you know, kind of not in contact with life or kind of retreating. So for me, it actually felt really good to be like, no, just dive in, you know?
I feel like a lot of what Zen was for me and is for me is this, you know, getting yourself going 100% in one direction, you know, and it's like we're scattered, we're going, you know, two horses going forward, two going back, you know, diagonal, all this stuff. And so we're going in all these directions. And I feel like my time at Sogenji was so much about, and Zazen was so much about bringing that all into oneness. And that's what the Sosokan is born out of, and all that comes into oneness. And there you are, fully going in one direction, you know. And
yeah.
I was so scattered in many ways before I went into training.
Me too. I mean, still am. I feel, it's like I have experience in some ways, like sitting with life, you know, kind of occurring.
Yeah.
And really beautifully, you know, during sessions, really having really beautiful experiences of feeling like deep acceptance, you know, just this, and without this, is without a desire to change any of it, just saying like, this is the way it is.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm here.
But
like, you know, it's like, I think to be to be really beneficial in the world, like, yeah, I'd like to kind of harness my energy better. I'd like to develop skill. I'd like to cultivate kind of more, concentration, and have that be the basis so that I can, so that I don't just kind of dissipate into.
So, okay. So what's your goal with Zen? What's, you know what I mean? What are you, what, you're going and you're, you feel compelled, and, but what's the, you know, what, what's your hopes and dreams with Zen?
I feel like this is the thing that is like, it feels like so presumptuous to even say in a way, you know, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I want to wake up to my true nature. I want to learn how to rest in that and live out of that, you know, and to have every action kind of manifesting that, or at least like on the road to manifesting that, you know?
Beautiful.
I want to have continuous access to that. Like,
Beautiful.
And that feels to me like there's nothing more. There's nothing. I can't think of a single thing that feels more important. You know, in a way, it'd be very convenient if I could think of another thing that, that seemed important. But it really,
I know it can be like, you know, life is sort of there, but how can we can't really reach it, you know, until we've really connected and really met this source and really live from it, you know. Kind of my experience, you know, before my time, before Japan, was that I felt like I really couldn't engage with my life. I was, you know, I felt it was far away in a way. You know? And how to, and this is part of my experience with training in the Mu Koan, was all about how can I sort of climb through that entanglement and kind of reach this, you know, pure place and move from that. And that's a whole big process, a whole big, beautiful, sublime experience and process. I know exactly what, I feel like I know what you mean.
And the sense that anything else that I would want to do is like a roundabout way of doing that, you know? So it's like, well, I could become a philosophy professor, but I would, you know, I would be like, well, really, I'm just talking the words about it, you guys. You'd have to go, you know, you know, or I could become a psychologist, which would be, you know, helpful to people. But I'd also come to this moment where I'd be like, but really, like, the bottom of this is, you know, this other deeper question about being a human being at all.
Yes. No, I love it. Yeah, I think that's, I'm the same as you in that way.
I know, that was so incredible about finding, just finding the blog. In fact, even the Rinzai Zen Facebook discussion group. Sunny, those are also words that I say to my friends quite frequently now. Just such incredible conversation, and so many sincere practitioners that I felt so inspired by. And the sense of, like, of shared, shared intention and purpose, and and, you know, disagreement sometimes, but
I started, there were a couple pages on Facebook that I started to make little comments a couple years ago, and I would write something, and then Mado would always say it better. Like, more articulate. He would say it better, which, you know, he's pretty articulate.
He's so articulate. I mean, that was the thing. I know, I had this experience with him where I was just like, wow, the same thing, actually. It's like, I think I thought that, I had that opinion, but it was nowhere near as fleshed out or, like, articulate and, like, you know, comprehensive as that. But, yeah, I'm so excited to get to go study with him and to train with him. Yeah, his book, The Rinzai Way, kind of floated around Tassajara one summer. You know, and all of us Soto students are kind of like, well, what are we doing, you guys? You know, I remember having a conversation with my boyfriend at the time,
Yeah.
Who had actually, he joined Zen Center after I called him. You know, he was the one I called and said, hey, I'm so sorry, I have to stay here. And so he got into Zen too. So there's, yeah, now he's at Tassajara. Oh. I hope he's well.
Right. Right.
But, you know, kind of, we had a conversation. We're like, maybe we're Rinzai people, you know, maybe. Maybe we're just in the wrong place.
Yeah.
But I appreciate both, you know. I'm glad to have had the training that I did.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and I think you always talk about it really beautifully, this kind of, yeah, this interplay between effort and activity, and then really kind of relaxing and getting out of the way.
You know, my my life is actually pretty yin. You know, I'm pretty I mean, I think I really came to the training, and like the whole yang or efforting aspect that Rinzai really has very strong. Right. That, I mean, I was like the most intense, and then the Roshi was just, you know, 200% more intense than me, you know, and so that was wonderful for me because I needed someone more intense so that I could, you know, bang against the wall and nothing would happen, you know.
Right.
So for me, I really needed that incredible intensity to bounce off of. But actually, through my experiences, I became much more of this. I'm receiving. I'm more in this open place than, and so of course we have both, but and maybe I just evened out, you know what I mean? But but that, very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like when you say it, what you say about the Zhen Zhuang and the non-directed movement, that it's so helpful to kind of build that energy first.
Yes.
Really get it centered and then to kind of let it move. I felt like I was like, I feel like I actually need to concentrate that energy before I can just sit shikantaza, you know, otherwise I, you know, kind of wonder what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yes. And not to babble on too much about this for me, but just this idea of, you know, when you sit down there, we have no idea what's going on. What's everyone doing? And for me, when I started to do these body practices, some of this internal momentum began to happen. And then when I would sit to do the Zazen, there was all this stuff that was happening. This momentum was there. And so those, whereas before when I sat, it was like a pressure cooker. Things weren't moving, right?
Right. And right.
So then when I sat down after doing these body practices, so much was happening. I thought, oh, that's what everyone's doing. They're involved in this whole process. You know, while I was there at first efforting and breathing hard, you know, like you first learn Sisokan and you're like making a bunch of noise, you know, and you know, eventually, oh, they're engaging in this really subtle, powerful process. And so the body practices, they really were a gateway for me to be able to feel and engage with and explore this kind of energetic momentum.
Right. Which is so rich. Then all of a sudden you're like, I mean, I don't need much more fancy. It's like just watching that and letting it move and kind of, yeah, feeling it interact with whatever else is happening is so powerful and interesting that.
Yes, yes.
My thoughts aren't that really compelling anymore. Yeah.
Your thoughts become less powerful, right? And then this whole process starts to happen. And then it, like you say, it comes out into your life, and then you're meeting everything with this energy and relating with everything you meet through this energy. And that becomes a whole dialogue that you get to explore further and further.
And then it feels, it's like an experience of non-duality. It's not just like, you know, things are not separate. It's like, no, like things are separate. You know, like there's all of this, you know, kind of interplay and dynamic and, you know, yeah, to learn how to live. And I do feel like that living in alignment with that, I mean, it's tricky. It's an interesting question why, you know, Zen masters have, you know, become kamikaze pilots or something, or, you know, or all of the kind of, you know, abuse that we've seen in the Buddhist community. Even with that, I guess there is some part of me that still does trust that if you're living from that place,
Yeah.
At least the majority of your actions are going to be awakening, are going to be peaceful, are going to bring real good to the world, you know?
Yes.
Just by meeting it in that way. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I've lived with a Roshi for, you know, several years. You see that they are, they're very extreme in many ways, and they're very, you know, their life is very narrow, and they know about one thing so deeply. And, you know, they don't necessarily know about other things, and they could be influenced in other ways, you know. But I always felt like, you know, I'm here to learn this very in-depth experience, but I don't need to learn about biology from this person, you know.
Right. And I don't expect them to know so much about biology.
Yes, we get a little confused. I think people go, well, that person, you know, was influenced into this political action. And, you know.
Right. God, it's such a complicated, yeah.
Complicated.
I don't expect them to know, but yeah, ethical.
Yeah.
Ethical action, like, well, actually, maybe you should know some more about that. Maybe, yeah, but.
It's true.
Maybe that's a whole other conversation.
No, it's true. You're right. No, it's tricky.
I think having clear expectations will be like a key in like the health of future sanghas. Being like, yeah, just having this sense like your teacher is an awakened being. Yes, like please don't give up that faith. Or if they're not, maybe find someone who is. You know, or maybe you don't need that. But however you feel, but don't give away everything. You know, like remain somehow in contact with your own sense of moral uprightness. And be conscious that they might have some really big shadows and maybe even childhood wounds, you know, that haven't, they're not quite so conscious of. So I think it'll be a real interesting way for the future of sanghas to find, without sacrificing faith, that's for me the big thing, without sacrificing devotion and, you know, reverence, but clarity or something of,
Love it. Yep, you're right. I think I'm not worried about Zen. You're gonna keep going, and you're gonna you're gonna keep going into it, and the ship will true course, I think.
Yeah, if we can keep practice alive, that's what I think. If we have people who like, you know, like you that are sharing these practices, that are, you know, so patient with us as we you know, and so generous with your time, you know, and like Meido Muroshi too, like, I mean, I'm amazed at how much he's willing to articulate and how much effort, really.
I know.
It's like, he shares so much. And it seems like, yeah, he's got endless energy. So,
yes.
I think having people who are actually alive with practice, you know, for whom it's really like.
Yes. Yeah.
It will be key.
Well, so there's, why would the 20-some-year-old healthy, you know, talented person, why would they, you know, they're not in the Zendos in America, right? And why not, and why should they be?
Oh, I don't know where they are. I realize that most of the things I do, I'm accompanied by 75-year-olds. Like, wow, all the things I love, somehow I'm always the youngest one by quite a bit. I don't know. I don't know where they are.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I think people will come around. It's interesting that yoga has gotten so popular and meditate, you know, mindfulness. And I think at a certain point, people are going to say, wait a second, I actually don't feel comfortable extracting this practice out of its cultural context, which I keep thinking, like, you know, like with whole grains, you know, it like, the germ and the husk are all, maybe not the husk, I don't know the words, but like the rest of the grain is important, not just the internal kernel or whatever. And so that religion's kind of similar. It's like, yeah, you can eat you know, extracted wheat or something, but you're missing the whole thing, and it might not actually be that nutritious, and you might be losing a lot of the really potent, potent and nourishing aspects of it. So I think people are, I feel like people are going to start wanting traditions, you know, and traditional practices with lineages and ancestry.
Love it, for sure. I think you're right. What else you want to talk about? What else you want to say?
I guess, I mean, maybe this is the second part of your question. I am kind of confused, like, yeah, for me, I remember sitting, I was taking the bus to go to Tahoma, and it was kind of, had to take like two buses and ferry, it was a whole, I think so, a whole thing, but I remember just sitting in the parking lot and just crying, just saying like, what, like, why is it that no one's talking about what the point of life is? Like, what is the point, you know? And not in like a, you know, nothing is good and, you know, somebody, not like that. Just like, what are we doing here? And why, like, why? And how do we actually live in a way that most deeply takes that into account, you know? Like, I don't want to just be another worker that gives my lifeblood to some big corporation. You know, and kind of eases any questions or despair with, you know, another nice dress or something, or, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, even art, like I felt, I really love art of all kinds, but I was like, I don't want to just be a consumer of art. Like, I want to make art, you know, and for me to make art, I feel like I have to be tapped in. Like, what I really want, I have to be tapped.
Yes.
For me to make the kind of art that I would actually want to make.
Yes, exactly. Yes, yes.
Otherwise, it just feels like we're just consuming and just working, and no one's clear about why we're doing anything. And, you know, even deep relationships seem questionable sometimes, or difficult, so difficult. So, yeah, for me, it's like I would love to have more of a public conversation, you know, of like, what is like a good human life, you know, like what are we here to do? How do we be most fully human? How do we, and I think, what's the purpose? I think young people are starving for that, and they're so hungry, and they don't even know that that's what they're hungry for.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
I think it's been so long since there's been public acknowledgement that just living in a capitalist society and fulfilling its demands is not that satisfying. You know? Like, internally, spiritually, it's like, it's missing something so vast.
Yes. 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 Let's see here. Do you think it requires some kind of experience or problem to hit a wall in yourself that makes you make that leap? Because I think that, you know, most people, they feel out of touch, but it's not urgent enough for them to really, you know, get on that bus to Tahoma, you know, or, you know, I think often that, I mean, that great doubt, you know, it has to, often, I think it has to be pretty urgent for people to take the leap, you know. For me, I went to Sogenji after 9/11.
Right.
So, I was, you know, I was just a, you know, total problem. So I needed it, but it helped me, you know?
Right. Oh. Right. I mean, I feel like this quarantine, this whole COVID has been this kind of like, well, Laura, what's really important in your life? You know, like really, what do you want? And kind of, all right, let's do it. I think to your question, I think that's often true. I think that's often true. Like great. Like people always mention that, you know, Dogen Zenji's mother died when he was 9 and he had this moment watching the incense kind of disappearing into the, and the moments like that, right, where life just confronts you in a way where you can't do your normal, you know, tricks, your normal like ways of making everything better. You just can't say like, I just have to experience this, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's true, and it happens in a variety of ways. Sometimes it's like circumstance, and sometimes it's psychological, or sometimes it's like circumstantial. I guess I also have this hope though that, like, because in my childhood, I was thinking about this conversation, like remembering as a child sitting in this field, like on this rock, you know, kind of late afternoon, and this sense of wide open peace, you know, that had like the way I related to time felt notably different. It didn't feel, you know, I was just totally there in the present, you know?
Yeah.
And felt so broad. And I think there's a way of encouraging that. I think we have glimpses of this all the time in our lives. I think everyone does, you know?
Yeah.
And bringing people's attention to those kinds of moments to say, like, that moment in the kitchen you had, you know, a few days ago where you just felt this, like, let's as a society kind of focus on those moments. Like, how do we live with that? Yeah. Not because we're trying to get away from something or fix something or solve some problem, but even because that's where we feel our lives most deeply. That's where we feel. So I think there would be a way of encouraging and supporting people to follow through that.
Yeah.
I wonder, that's a question.
Yeah.
And then definitely the great doubt and the kind of life toppling over will always be a good motivation to practice. That's what, it becomes very clear, you don't really have another option.
Yes. I know, I think with my blog, you know, and with my classes, you know, my goal is to try to get people to become fascinated with their experience.
Right.
And because in doing that, you know, in meeting reality, it begins to open for you, you know. And if we can get people, if I can help someone to become fascinated with their experience, then they'll begin to open, you know. And I think through that, these gifts come and compassion begins. All these things start to just unravel as we really engage with, in a really creative, honest, fascinating way with what we're doing all the time, you know. So I love what you're saying. We got to create a culture of that.
Right. And yeah.
Love it.
Well, you're contributing so much.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But okay, well, what else? Anything else you want to say? Final wise words.
I don't know. I just had this impulse to say, like, yeah, if people are feeling called to go to monasteries and train intensively or to find their teachers, like, please go do it. You know, please. Because I do feel this urgency for the next generation of practitioners to kind of emerge. And I'm wondering, where are you guys, you know? And how are we going to keep this really precious practice and tradition going?
Yes.
If people aren't, you know, some people don't just decide to kind of jump in, so.
Yes. Lovely. Good. Well, how about we end it there, if that's okay.
That's good.
Thank you so much for joining me. I learned a lot from you, and good luck at Kurrenji.
Thank you.
Awesome. And say hi to Mado and the whole crew there. They're all my buddies. All those people. Oh. They somehow I've become close with them.
Well, maybe you can come visit someday too.
I'm gonna come. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, safe travels and all that. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Craig.
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.